Up next, we turn to Movie Mole's Denise Morris and Fran Michel for a review of Ridley Scott's 1979 film Alien. I'd like to welcome Denise Morris back. She has been on a hiatus from the Old Mole and will start us off.
2014 marks the 35th anniversary of the Ridley Scott 1979 film Alien. This October, along with several other classics in the horror genre, Portlanders had the opportunity to see Alien on the big screen. I was able to catch it, showing at the Hollywood Theater on their very large modern movie screen, and it was pretty spectacular, I have to say. Alien has been the subject of much debate and critical thinking as far back as the 1980 Symposium on Alien in the Journal of Science Fiction Studies, that was Volume 7, in case you want to dig it up. And our own movie mole, Fran Michel, my partner in review today, has written on science fiction and teaches a film studies course that includes Alien as one of its subjects. We are prepared to talk about Alien in many different ways, celebrating its 35th birthday and all of its incarnations, its goods and its bads, and maybe to direct folks towards a little bit of good reading on it. But Fran, before we dig in, let's give folks a little synopsis of the film.
Okay, well, the crew of Seven is awoken early by the ship's computer in response to a signal from a nearby planet. Unhappy at the assignment of this new task, the engineering crew complains about the bonus situation and the lesser shares that they're going to be paid. On exploration, the signal proves to come from an abandoned alien ship whose interior contains what one crew member describes as another egg-like member describes as these bursts open and something attaches itself to an element. The Ripley, the highest-ranking officer on the ship, refuses to break quarantine in order to allow the injured crew back into the ship. The science officer, Ash, overrides her order and admits them. The thing on Kane's face can't be removed. It strangles him when they try to pry it off. It bleeds corrosive acid when they try to cut it off. Later, it just falls off by itself, and Kane seems to be fine. But as the crew are sitting down to a last meal before returning to hypersleep, an alien bursts out of his chest and escapes. Most of the remaining crew are gradually killed off as they try to find and expel the alien from the ship. After the captain is killed and Ripley has become senior officer, she discovers the secret directive from the company. Their top priority is to return the alien to Earth. All other considerations, including the crew, are expendable. Ash is discovered to be an android assigned to this secret mission and is killed by the other crew in self-defense. Finally, only Ripley and the ship's cat make it alive into the escape shuttle, and the rest of the ship is blown up in an effort to destroy the alien. It turns up on the shuttle, however, where Ripley does single combat with it, expelling it into space, clearing the way for many sequels and prequels.
Indeed. Fran, we both love this movie, and we are sensible enough to have good critiques of it, as were other people that came before us. But like we try to do, we'll start with what we love about it. And for me, as someone who was not a real horror fan growing up and would have been a teenager when this came out, I didn't really go see it. But when I think about horror films, I still don't want to go see them. But what I love about this is that it does actually scare you without really having to see much of the monster. And in this way, I think there are certain things that distinguish this film from the others, which is this little tease we get of the alien, but also it's very quiet. It's very paced and quiet. It's this workaday kind of environment. The sounds are environmental versus having a big score. So we're actually allowed to kind of be in it and travel inside that space along with the characters. Not to sound too cornball, but seeing it on the big screen, you really get that feel where you feel like you're right there inside that. And it's very claustrophobic. And of course, it functions well as a horror film in the sense that it has its conventions for how it might scare you. But it's very well done and artistically created.
It's a beautiful film in a lot of ways. It starts with these really long, slow tracking shots through the ship. So you get a sense of the space of the ship, and you do get this sense of claustrophobia, but it also builds this very slow suspense. I mean, it takes a long time before you start encountering the alien or any of its various forms. And as as you say, we see it usually sort of indirectly, or we don't get a very good look at it, which hides any imperfections in the special effect, but also gives you a sense of the anxiety that is part of not quite being sure what you're seeing. So it's a really scary movie with techniques that contemporary films are less likely to don, because it does build so very slowly at the beginning.
I would say, too, that I don't think that anyone would describe Aliens, Aliens 3, or Resurrection as being a horror film necessarily. This one really stands out in that it's either consciously or not. You imagine that there was some thinking going on here, but because the film has been described as a horror, science fiction, and at times also a slasher film.
Yeah, there's a famous book by Carol Clover called Men, Women, and Chainsaws, in which she discusses Alien as an instance of the 70s slasher films. And Texas Chainsaw Massacre was apparently one of the films that the writers and director were thinking of when they were developing the film. And it really resembles it in a lot of ways. And Clover, in her analysis, points to sort of generic conventions associated with the slasher film, like The Terrible Place, which in Texas Chainsaw Massacre is this underground place of cannibalism and the dark family secrets. And in Alien is the ship, the various interstellar ships that we encounter, where you're enclosed with this horrible, horrible thing. And of course, one of the attractive features that people don't always realize is not unusual about Alien insofar as it's an instance of a slasher film is that the survivor is the figure that Clover calls the final girl, capital F, capital G. Ripley is played by Sigourney Weaver, and she's the only one to survive this horrible encounter with this nasty, sort of sexualized monster.
Well, except for the cat.
Yes.
And Jonesy will have his day. One other thing that stands out for me in placing this film, in 1977, Close Encounters was huge, and Portlanders also had recently an opportunity to see that film, and I found it quite disturbing in a particularly different way, but it made me think of Alien as a kind of antidote to the Spielberg Close Encounters, in which you have an apolitical government or a benign to some degree government and friendly accommodating aliens, and a lead character who leaves his family to go off with these friendly cuddly aliens. It's very bizarre. There's been some good writing about that. But Alien is, in fact, situated in a social context that is much different as we stand at the time at the doorstep of the Reagan era, which would mobilize and kind of solidify practices that are well known to us now.
Indeed, and in fact, Sigourney Weaver has recently been quoted when asked about the popularity of these films. 35 years later, why are people still so into this? And she comments that, well, actually, the world has started catching up with the vision of Alien, where you have this incredibly powerful and incredibly destructive corporation. In Alien, it's just referred to as the company, and nobody ever says what the name of it is. It's just the company, and it rules their lives, in effect. The ship that they're on is called the Nostromo, which is actually drawn from a work by Joseph Conrad and is drawn from the word for our man, which is about a mining village. The ship in Alien is towing a mining refinery. So, you know, now we're starting to talk about mining outer space, and that's what they're doing. And they're basically driving a big tow truck. And I think part of what I like about the film today is also this sense that it's this really ordinary workaday situation. It's the 70s, so they smoke and they're messy and they've got their cups of coffee and they're slouching around. And, you know, they land this thing on the planet and it's kind of bumpy, but it kind of like, yeah, this is what we're supposed to do. And I mean, so there's a class dimension in the conflict over the bonus situation, because the engineers who are working in another level of the ship are not paid as much. There's some sort of class conflict around that. And there's a real sense that this is, you know, the company controls everything, this unnamed and headless sort of power, which is sort of like what multinational companies these days are. They are destroying things. They're dangerous.
Right, exactly. And it's Dallas who says, what does he say about the company? The standard procedure is what the company tells you to do. And so the standard procedure is flexible, but certainly the contracts are not.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, with our last minute or so, we should dive into Ripley a bit, who's considered really a heroic character in the film as well as in the interest of film, that as a female character, this is very much a breakthrough, even if the character had originally been written for a man. She bridges this public-private sphere that is talked about in many of the materials that are available.
Yeah, I mean, there's something about the images of the alien, which was designed by H.R. Giger, the Swiss artist, is this weirdly sexual conglomeration of complicated, gendered, ambisexual parts. And part of the anxiety that the film taps into partly is the disruption of conventional gender roles, because it's about a man giving birth, and it kills him. He has this this creature pops out of his body. I mean, there's something sexual and scary about it, and it messes up our ideas of gender. But it's also, it's a touchstone in the Bechdel test, that famous, now famous thing that comes from Alison Bechdel's cartoon Dykes to Watch Out For, the test for a movie being, and this is a very low bar, or should be, that it includes at least two women, named characters, who talk to each other about something other than a man. And the character in the cartoon that introduces this notion of a test for film says the last movie I could see was Alien, because they talk to each other about the monster.
Right, and the monster doesn't quite count as a man. So.
Yeah, it's neither male nor female. Yeah. Maybe both. We're not really sure. Yeah. We don't know how it reproduces exactly. It's all very complicated.
But we know it's dangerous.
It's dangerous. And there's not a sense of gender being a particularly important feature for the crew or for the movie until near the end, when we do get some shots of Sigourney Weaver's very lovely body in teeny tiny underwear.
Yeah, why doesn't she have to wear a diaper?
Apparently, it's to reassure us that actually, after all of this, women are still women, and like you can tell men and women apart. And
yeah, but yeah. Exactly. It sort of does bring that back together, or sanely.
But as you say, it's responding to this 1970s sort of feminist, liberal feminist moment, and the illusion that women can humanize the workforce. So although it seems a little bit there just to build tension, but she goes back for the cat, but she saves the cat. So it's a fantasy. Arguably, Judith Newton has written about this in that science fiction studies issue of white women coming into the workplace and humanizing capitalism and making it something that's tolerable and making it a little bit better than it would otherwise be. So it's this kind of liberal feminist fantasy about women in the workplace.
And Ripley brings a kind of idealism, is sort of a company man in her own way.
She is, as you say, she is a company woman. She ends the film making her final log entry, Ripley, third officer of the Nostromo, signing off. She's the one who wants to follow the rules about quarantine. If we'd followed the rules, they wouldn't have gotten this thing back. But of course, the company wants this thing back. And there's a moment when she sees the directive that the crew are expendable. And I think that's part of what makes it still resonant. As Sigourney Weaver said, we're realizing again more the extent to which for capitalism, for neoliberalism, crew is expendable, laborer is expendable, people are not really profitable. And so you can get rid of them if you can make more money that way.
Exactly. And that's really what I find to be the underlying best piece of the film, is to begin to reveal something that is darker than, say, A Close Encounters can reveal, which is really somehow strangely about the fuzzy loveliness of family. Not sure exactly, but...
Well, and it's so much better than Prometheus, which was Ridley Scott's attempt a couple of years ago to try to recapture the success of Alien. And it's Prometheus is so pretentious, and it's about our place in the universe, and it's just ridiculous. When with Alien, you had a movie that was about a bunch of people driving a tow truck in space, essentially. And that's where you find out something really insightful about the way the world works.
I agree, yes. Fran, thank you. And I'm happy to be back to the Old Mole. And this is Denise Morris with Fran Michel signing off. We have been talking about Alien.